Chapter 19. Not Men's Work. All the archaeologists we have met so far have been men. For quite a long time, archaeology was a male pursuit. But two pioneering women, Gertrude Bell and Harriet Boyd Hawes, proved that it was not just men's work. They blazed a trail for the women archaeologists of today. The two women were complete opposites. One was a solitary desert traveler, the other an excavator. Most male archaeologists at the time believed that women were most useful as clerks or librarians, yet today many of the world's finest archaeologists are women. Gertrude Bell, 1868 to 1926, was the daughter of a wealthy Yorkshire ironmaster. In 1886, at a time when few women attended any university, she went to Oxford. She was a brilliant student and graduated with a degree in modern history. Moreover, she emerged with a passion for travel and a reputation for speaking her mind. In 1892, she visited Tehran, Persia, at the time a remote destination. She then traveled extensively and took up mountaineering, very much a male pastime, becoming one of the leading female climbers of the day. Gertrude was a talented linguist, and in 1899 she moved to Jerusalem for 7 months to improve her Arabic. From there, she traveled farther afield, to the temples at Palmyra in Syria, and across the desert to Petra. She discovered the discomforts of desert travel, black beetles and muddy drinking water. As she chattered away to sheikhs and storekeepers in her now fluent Arabic, she began to understand the complex and sometimes violent politics of these arid lands. This was also where she developed an interest in archaeology. She was never an excavator. She surveyed remote sites, photographed them, and wrote about them. After taking more than 600 photographs of ancient monuments, Gertrude Bell spent the next few years traveling in Egypt, Europe, and Morocco, and studying archaeology in Rome and Paris. In 1902, she worked on excavations in western Turkey. Then, in 1905, she went to survey and study monuments in Syria and Cilicia, Turkey, dating from the Byzantine Empire, the eastern continuation of the old Roman Empire. It finally fell to the Turks in 1453. Her travel book, The Desert and the Sown, was published in 1907. And her report on the churches in the Byzantine city of Berbinkeles, most of which no longer exist, established her as both a travel writer and a scholar. Gertrude Bell was, above all, a desert archaeologist. Tough and fiercely independent, her primary interest was architecture and little-known but important sites from the time after the Roman Empire collapsed in the West, in AD 476. With Berbinkeles behind her, she now set off from Aleppo in Syria across the Syrian desert to the Euphrates. She traveled through dangerous country with a small military escort. Her destination was the Abbasid castle of Ukadir, a huge rectangular fort built in AD 775. The Abbasid dynasty, descended from an uncle of the Prophet Muhammad, governed the Islamic Empire from AD 750 until about 1258. For 4 days, she photographed and surveyed the fort, which no one had described before. Her soldier guards insisted on clutching their rifles as they held her measuring tapes. "I can't persuade them to put the damnable things down," Bell complained. She did not excavate, but contented herself with a general description of Ukadir's architecture. This was a major contribution, for Ukadir was virtually unknown. Her most famous book, Amarath to Amarath, which appeared in 1911, described the site for the general public and attracted much praise. Her academic report on Ukadir was published 3 years later and is still a principal source. She was soon off again, to Baghdad and Babylon, and then on to Assur in the north, where German archaeologists Walter André and Conrad Preusser were excavating the Assyrian capital. Expert archaeologists working on Greek sites had trained both men, and she admired their careful excavations. They taught her how to use flashlights when photographing dark interiors. On her way home, Belle stopped at the Carchemish excavations in northern Syria, where she found British archaeologists Reginald Campbell Thompson and T.E. Lawrence, later to become famous for his desert exploits in the First World War, which earned him the name Lawrence of Arabia. See Chapter 20. With her usual bluntness, she told them that their excavations were prehistoric compared with those of the Germans. Campbell Thompson and Lawrence were not best pleased and tried to impress her with their archaeological expertise. They failed. The Carchemish workers jeered as she left. Years later, she learned that Lawrence had told them she was too plain to marry. By the outbreak of the First World War, Gertrude Belle had completed major survey work, but she also had vital knowledge of Arabia and the neighboring regions. Her briefings for British intelligence were so valuable that in 1915 she was posted to the Arab Intelligence Bureau in Cairo. A new chapter in her life began a year later when she was transferred to Basra, at the head of the Persian Gulf, to study local tribal politics. She was fascinated by Arab culture, became a champion of Arab independence, and served as an expert advisor to local British officials. Once the war ended, numerous foreign expeditions sought to return to Mesopotamia to investigate Eridu, said to be the earliest city in the world, and Ur, where the biblical Abraham, founder of Judaism, had lived. But times were changing, and no longer could foreign archaeologists dig where they liked, nor could they export all their finds. Governments were now also insisting on excavation permits issued to qualified archaeologists. The government of the new state known as Iraq was rightly concerned. Gertrude Belle was the only person in Baghdad with any knowledge of archaeological survey and excavation, and so she was appointed Director of Antiquities. No one expected her to excavate, but her experience of site surveys and her knowledge of archaeologists were invaluable. She also wrote laws governing the treatment of antiquities and organized the Iraq Museum. The new laws required all excavation finds to be divided between the foreigners, usually a museum, and Iraq. Belle was a tough negotiator, and the Iraq Museum collections grew rapidly. In March 1926, the government gave the museum a permanent home in Baghdad, where Belle displayed finds from all the major excavations, including the German digs at Babylon. See Chapter 20. Gertrude Belle was rather a pushy woman, with strong opinions about local politics. She did not suffer fools gladly, and she made numerous enemies. Government officials came to distrust her. Increasingly isolated, she buried herself ever deeper in archaeological matters. Overworked and in poor health, Belle committed suicide in July 1926. All Baghdad attended her funeral. Though Belle's intelligence and archaeological learning were legendary, she does not enjoy a good reputation in Iraq today. Many Iraqis believe she gave too much away to the foreign expeditions. There may be some truth in that, but Belle always tended to put the interests of archaeology and science above purely national goals, and at the time, there were no facilities in Iraq to preserve the delicate objects. Nevertheless, the Iraq Museum stands as an enduring memorial to a unique and important figure in the history of archaeology. The feisty Harriet Boyd Hawes, 1871 to 1945, the first woman to excavate on Crete, was digging at the time Gertrude Belle was traveling. The daughter of a firefighting equipment manufacturer, Harriet Boyd's mother died early. With four older brothers, she learned to stand up for herself. She started attending Smith College in Massachusetts in 1881, just as Gertrude Belle entered Oxford. A lecture at the college about ancient Egypt by the English traveler, novelist, and archaeological writer Amelia Edwards sparked in Harriet an interest in ancient civilizations. After graduating, she worked as a teacher, eventually saving enough money to visit Europe in 1895. While in Greece, Harriet developed a keen interest in the ancient Greeks. She returned the following year to study at the British School of Archaeology in Athens. Between the balls, dinners, and other social engagements, she found time to study ancient and modern Greek and to visit archaeological sites. She also caused a stir by cycling around Athens. War between Greece and Turkey broke out in 1897. Harriet immediately volunteered for Red Cross duty in central Greece. Tending to the wounded under fire gave her first-hand experience of the horrors of war. Hospital conditions were dreadful. The men lay so close to one another that dressing their wounds was near impossible. After the war, she stayed on to nurse victims of a typhoid epidemic. The local people never forgot the debt they owed her. Back in the United States, Harriet won a research fellowship to study inscriptions at ancient Eleusis, near Athens. She wanted to excavate, but the American School of Classical Studies in Athens was scandalized. It considered digging men's work. Instead, a war refugee from Crete suggested she should dig on that island, where almost no one was working. So Harriet contacted Arthur Evans, who was about to start digging at Knossos, and the Oxford University archaeologist David Hogarth, who was already excavating on Crete. Sophia Schliemann, Heinrich's widow, also arranged for her to meet other important archaeologists passing through Athens. Encouraged by these influential backers and defying those who thought her adventure scandalous, Harriet arrived on Crete at a time when there were just 19 kilometers of paved roads on the island. Like everyone else, archaeologists traveled by mule. Evans and Hogarth advised her to talk to the local people as she explored a stretch of the north coast. Word of this unusual solitary female traveler spread through the local villages. A Cretan schoolmaster took Harriet to Merompolu Bay. There she found a maze of partially exposed stone walls, numerous painted potsherds, and traces of a narrow, stone-paved alleyway. The next day, she returned with a crew of workers who exposed blocks of houses. She displayed a remarkable flair for excavation. Soon, she had 100 men and, unusually, perhaps a first, 10 women uncovering what turned out to be the small Minoan town of Gornia. Far smaller than Knossos, Gornia provided an unrivaled picture of a small Bronze Age community, with artifacts identical to those at Knossos. Harriet worked on the town in 1901, 1903, and 1904, focusing mainly on the high point of its existence, between about 1750 and 1490 BC. The excavations, sponsored in part by the University of Pennsylvania Museum, uncovered entire blocks of more than 70 houses, cobbled alleyways, a Minoan palace, and a cemetery. Gornia was an astounding achievement for any archaeologist. 4 years after the excavation ended, Harriet published a large report in which she presented every detail of her excavations. No one could now accuse her of scandalous behavior or challenge her archaeological credentials. This was Harriet's last fieldwork, and it made her an admired pioneer of American archaeology in the Mediterranean. She became the first woman to lecture before the Archaeological Institute of America. In 1906, she married British anthropologist Charles Hawes, and they had two children. In 1916 and 1917, during the First World War, she was heavily involved in nursing in Serbia and on the Western Front. Her involvement with archaeology continued, but strictly in the classroom. She taught ancient art at Wellesley College, Massachusetts, for many years. Both Gertrude Bell and Harriet Boyd Hawes were the equals of any male archaeologists of their day. Bell, the desert traveler, an expert government administrator, understood desert people better than almost any outsider. For her part, Harriet Boyd Hawes was a superb excavator. She returned to Crete once more as a welcome guest in 1926. Arthur Evans gave her a tour of Knossos, and she traveled to Gornia on a mule, arriving to a noisy welcome from the local people.